The executive producer for this episode of Walnut Grovecast is Laura Furman. Hello and welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. If you haven't listened and subscribed, please check out the newest shows from Walnut Grovecast, Bonnet Heads, and the Little House Book Club. They are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or just visit walnutgrovecast.com for more information. As always, these podcasts are free of charge as well as commercial free, thanks to the following supporters: Marianne Lockwood, Stephanie Bailey, Rana Ludwig, Stacey Corrigan, Whitney Griggs, Jill Stellman, Chris Cooling from the Forgotten TV podcast, Brian Sellers, Dean Almanzo Butler, Lori Dorian, Matt Mercier, Christina Pedersen, Cheryl Van Dusen, Michelle Terrier, Brian C. Mellenbacher, Leah Chiapino, Margaret LaVisca, Jennifer Jones, Julia Schroeder, Tanya Weber, J.J. Hurley, Elizabeth Villamagna, Melissa Half-Pint Gilbert, Robin Lee, Shannon Quinton, Lydia Cucucci from Late Nights with Hitchcock podcast, Elvira Dabas, Candy Gleason, Angie Zidava, Megan Eichner, Margot Moore, Cindy Wilson, Kelly Milkey from the Dr. Quincast podcast, Alicia Olin, Rachel Boren, Stephanie Carnes, Katie Bollinger, Julia Monin, Rebecca Frederick, Peyton England, Stacey Keller, Bobby Young, Teresa Trapp, Jeannie Schneider Mitchell, Max Duration, Whitney Cole, Laura Furman, Val Williams, Anne Quinn, The No Agenda Podcast, Jeannie Comer, Aaron Wortman, Don Roberts, Rebecca Harris, Sherry Benner, Angela Bowen from the Looking Back on My Wonder Years, A Wonder Years podcast, Susan King, Leah Mitchell from the Retro TV podcast, Jeff Griffin, Megan Parker, Michelle Ferguson, Erin McManus, Andre Bjargesen, Chelsea Wofford, Marissa Baker, Thori Rodriguez, Matilda Smith-Thompson, Cheyenne Hampton, Laura Solarin, Spunky Cheek, Dana Wilkins, Chantel Dubois-Nishiyama, and Suzanne Holland. Thank you all for your support. You make this podcast possible, and in my eyes, it is truly your podcast. So if you have any ideas, suggestions, or even demands, please feel free to reach out to me. If you would like to support Walnut Grovecast, please visit patreon.com/walnutgrovecast. Without further delay, please enjoy the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. This is Mark, and you are listening to Walnut Grovecast. I'm still getting used to these settings. I have on tonight, rejoining the show, Jeannie Schneider Mitchell. How are you doing, Jeannie?
I'm doing pretty well. A little bit warm. It hit 90, I think, on my way home from work tonight.
Oh, really? Did it? I'm in the highest point of my house, so it does get very warm up here. But I've had the air conditioning running up here, so it's pretty comfortable up here, actually.
Yeah, we've got the air conditioning running down here, too. Yeah. I have my husband and the cats, and I have a basement apartment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that should mean that it's a little bit cooler, I would hope.
Yeah, and one of the cats has joined us for the podcast.
Which cat?
This is Victoria, Vicky for short. Albert, I call him Albie for short.
Right.
He's off doing his own thing somewhere. He may wander in.
Which of them are the most vocal?
Vicky. Albert is very quiet. I very rarely hear him meow.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And it's usually when he's feeling some pretty strong feelings.
Well, that's good. Maybe we'll hear him a little bit in a little bit. Mm-hmm. Hear him a little bit in a little bit. So, yeah. tonight we're going all the way back to a week before Halloween of 1982. And the episode that we're discussing is what?
It's Little Lou.
Little Lou, which is Billy Barty. Billy Barty, pretty much, I would say, the most, at this period of time especially, the most popular and most famous little person in Hollywood, yes. Right? I mean, the guy was in everything.
And one of the most amazing, not only did he leave behind a huge body of work, but he also founded the Little People of America in 1957.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I was. I have another podcast that I do with Lydia Kikuchi called Late Nights with Hitchcock, and we were reviewing an episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and Billy Barty is in it from, I believe it's 1957, which is very interesting.
It was. He did a lot of film work, television work.
Yeah.
Some live performances. He started working at the age of three.
And for obvious reasons, I mean, he is a little person. He lived to be 76 years old, which is, yes. I think, a pretty, I mean, I think 76 is a pretty good age for almost anybody. But for a little person, usually they have reasons why their height is affected, or they go through a certain amount of physical issues. So 76 is pretty good, I think.
Yes, he had a form of dwarfism called cartilage hair hypoplasia. Mm-hmm. I did a little reading on it. They wouldn't have known what type of dwarfism it was when he was young, because the condition wasn't named until 1965.
Oh, really?
But it seems that other than the short stature, a little more possibility of osteoporosis and thin hair, people with this condition can live to a pretty normal age.
That's very interesting. So another thing is that's very interesting is this episode aired, like we said, a week before Halloween, but it also just so happens to have been his 58th birthday, I think. No, 48th birthday.
So that would have been October 25th.
Yes. So, yeah, which is pretty cool. You know, so this aired on his birthday. How quaint.
And it was his second appearance on the show. Mm-hmm. Also as a circus performer in the episode Annabelle.
Right, yeah. It would have been good to see him come back as like, hey, you remember me from Annabelle, don't you? But no, we don't. We don't have too much of linearity within the world of Little House on the Prairie. You know, it's very short storylines, and we don't have things that carry over too far. We just create a whole new character.
Yes, and a lot of characters whom we would have liked to see return seem to have disappeared into the Barnmuda Triangle.
Yeah, that's right. Kelly Mielke's Barnmuda Triangle. If you haven't read that, you should look up the Prairie Review. It's on WalnutGroveCast.com.
I love the Prairie Review.
Isn't it so clever and funny? And there's so many like little things that she puts in it. And I'm just really happy about it.
So am I. The only bad thing is usually I'm reading these articles on my commute to or from work. Mm-hmm. People tend to look at you funny if you're laughing out loud on a city bus.
You know, like cracking up.
And everybody gets it. Look, ooh, don't want to sit next to her.
Which is a good thing. Don't sit next to me. Give me my elbow space. So the episode starts out with interesting music and John Carter playing cards with Doc Baker. I think it's a little bit of a throwback to Lars and Doc when they would kind of play games But Doc's always finding somebody to hang out with. John Carter, as I like to call him, maybe Charles 2.0. No? Anyone out there? No, I'm kidding. But John Carter does have his moments, and I really like the character a lot. But no, he's no Charles. But here's some of that interesting music. It's kind of Brady Bunch-esque.
Well, come on. It's getting late. I gotta get home.
All right, so this is kind of funny. He's like, come on, you know, it's getting late. So I guess maybe they're playing poker. I'm not really sure. I don't know anything about card games. And they're playing for matchsticks, which is kind of cute. And they're going to play again, even though he's like, it's getting late. I have to go home. John gets up. He's like, you want some more coffee?
No, it's coming out of my ears.
Yeah. No, I'm not in any rush to go see Sarah, is essentially what he's saying. So we're just kind of hanging on Doc's office. Nothing else going on in Walnut Grove, you know. And all of a sudden,
I need a doctor. My wife, she's having a baby. We're just outside of town. Please help me.
I'll hitch up the team, Doc.
So Billy Barty, a little person, comes running in with clown makeup on. And if you look at Doc Baker, he's just kind of flummoxed. He's like, what is this? He doesn't say anything. But of course, he's going to go and help and do everything he can, right?
Of course. Well, I think that anybody would be flummoxed if somebody burst in with limb differences or dwarfism or just didn't look like the other 90% of the population.
But John has learned, I think he had a talk with Charles before Charles permanently moved away. He's like, look, if you're going to live in this house, you have to treat people a certain way. And John kind of shares the same type of fairness that Charles had embedded within him. And his love of coffee. Because the guy just keeps drinking coffee throughout this episode.
I don't know how they drink that much coffee and sleep.
I have no idea. I mean, Charles is basically having a gallon of coffee just to get to sleep. It's crazy.
And it's not like they had decaf back then.
No. I've actually switched to decaf. So, well, half and half these days. I'm too sensitive to caffeine. A sensitive person.
I don't bother with decaf so much, even though my doctor tells me that I should be drinking decaf because I have high blood pressure, among other things. But I think I've inherited my father's tendency to be impervious to caffeine.
Oh, there you go.
The only man I know in real life who can drink an entire pot of coffee and then fall asleep in front of the television.
That's Pappy.
Yep. And then if you turn off the television, of course, he'll immediately wake up and say, I was watching that.
Right. And he'll tell you everything that just happened. John,
don't ask me how he does it.
Yeah. Don't ask him either. He's never going to. So John is explaining, is just basically talking to Lou. And Lou explains how his wife is also a little person.
My wife's a little person, too. It's really been hard on her all these months. Long hours. Traveling every other day.
How'd you happen to be out here all alone?
Oh, we weren't alone. We were with the circus going to Sleepy Eye, and all of a sudden, the pain started. I was afraid to take the wagon into town. Lucky for me, I found you.
So I really like this character. I mean, he's a really damaged guy. Like, he's sad. But I think he kind of warms up even later. Even as things get worse, you start seeing how much of a good person Lou is.
Yes. And he has a great sense of humor about things.
Yeah, he's a little self-deprecating. You know, I kind of, you know, I don't really care for that type of thing, but he rolls with the punches. Now, being pregnant, I mean, just any woman, just your average woman getting pregnant, of course, is such a physical effort. I don't know a better word for it. It's your body's going through a tremendous change to have a child. I can only imagine that a little person, it would be far more, for lack of a better word for me to come up with one, destructive almost. It's just as though their bodies are small to begin with and possibly frail, and maybe their health isn't so great to begin with. And to be in this situation where you're having birth, it just has to be extremely, extremely dangerous. So, well, yeah.
Yes. Nowadays, a little person, a woman getting pregnant would be considered a high-risk pregnancy, and she'd immediately be referred to a high-risk obstetrician.
Right. Nowadays, we can make sure that the person has, you know, everything covered, but this, you know, now you're, you know, Doc Baker doesn't have exactly like the most stellar of resumes.
Well, he's a good doctor and he handles things well for community.
He's a country doctor though. You know, he's not really, I'm going to guess a country doctor would not normally run into a little person pregnancy.
That's what I was about to say, that this is not something that he'd see regularly. This might have been the only little person pregnancy that he's ever seen.
Yeah. And so Lou is just basically talking about himself a bit, and they talk more
all
about
my
coffee.
Life. Acrobat, clown, bookkeeper, you name it. I wonder what's taking him so long.
Come on, have some coffee.
Enough of the coffee. Come on. I dare you. Oh, let's race. But then we hear a baby crying. Which I'm going to guess is always, it's usually a pretty good sign that things are going well. And so let's see. Doc Baker comes out. And he's, I don't know how long they've been here. This is another thing. We don't have great timelines in Walnut Grove. It's as though this could be 4 hours. This could be, I just don't know. We just have no idea. But it has to be enough for Doc to get a little sweaty. So here we are.
Have a baby girl.
Is she?
Your baby seems to be perfect.
So this is another thing, is his daughter is now born, and it appears that she is just normal size, I guess, regular size, not a little person. And I would imagine that developing that child in her body is also extremely difficult, right?
Yes.
It just doesn't fit.
And the signs of dwarfism aren't, well, back then anyway, now there's all sorts of tests so they can tell. Mm-hmm. But so many kinds of dwarfism are not apparent at birth.
Right, right.
Billy Barty's wasn't. He was born, I think he was considered a large baby.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And as he developed, getting older, his parents noticed that he wasn't growing like right, other babies. Right.
And he also seems to have some type of spine issue when he walks. You can kind of see.
That could have developed with age because as I mentioned, with cartilage hair hypoplasia, osteoporosis can develop kind of early. And by the way, Barty married a little person as well.
Oh, really?
Yes. Their story is a whole other ball game. But he was married to the former Shirley Bolingbroke in 1962.
Oh, so you had a very long marriage as well, 38 years.
And they had two children. They had Lori the same year they got married. Lori was a little person. She had Turner syndrome. And their son Braden was born without any growth disorders. He grew to be 5'11".
Oh, wow. I'm 5'11 on a good day. So
I'm 4'11 without shoes.
Oh, wow. That's practically a dwarf. I'm just kidding.
You joke about it, but according to the Little People of America, I'm right on the border.
Right. You have to tippy-toe your way through.
Yes. My ex-husband, may he rest in peace, was 2 inches shorter than me.
Oh, wow. So he might have been considered a little person.
He would have been eligible for membership. And, well, he was a small man in a lot of ways, which is why he was my ex before he died.
Mm-hmm.
He actually wore a size 5 children's shoe.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a little guy. Is he Italian? Yeah. I always see little Italian guys, you know.
No, actually, his family was Eastern European.
Mm-hmm.
His growth was stunted, we thought, because of developing juvenile diabetes at a very early age. Wow. 17 months.
Wow.
Not that he ever would have been tall, because his mother was 5'2", his father was 5'4".
Mm-hmm.
But
wow, that's I mean, nonetheless, I think we've all gone to the point where we can see a little person and not act the way Harriet acts in the future, in later in this episode, you know?
Yes. Harriet Olsen, the original Karen.
Ooh, I have things to say about that once we get to it. But Doc Baker has other news, which is not as happy as your daughter is fine. Unfortunately, I would have thought that he would kind of lead with the bad news, maybe. I don't know. I don't know how I would personally handle this. I wouldn't want to.
I got a baby girl. I'm gonna go see my wife.
Mr. Bates, your wife.
My wife?
She's so small. So fragile. If she were stronger, I might.
He might have what? Like, I'm kind of deciphering in my head what he's trying to say here, because I thought his wife was dead the first time I saw this.
No.
But no, she's on her deathbed because of this.
Yes, I think that he's trying to figure out the best way, if there is a best way, to say your baby is healthy, but your wife is dying.
Right, and I can understand that the trauma to the body, but at the same time, Doc Baker's saying that had she been stronger, he would have, and he doesn't go into it.
He would have been able to save her.
Maybe. I don't know. It just doesn't. This scene is very sad. But he says, go in there and talk to her, of course. They go in there and they show this baby that is clearly a few months old. I think he would have washed his face by now, by the way. He still has the clown makeup on. He's waiting, doing nothing. He may as well go wash up while the, you know, don't you think?
I think so, but at the same time, he's waiting for his child to be born, and yeah. I'm sure that he knew the risk that his wife was facing. Probably the makeup would have been the last thing on his mind.
Well, I think I know where my priorities stand.
Well, you wouldn't have been wearing makeup.
Who knows what I would have been wearing? But I also notice in the background of when he goes to visit his wife, who's in bed with the baby, we have the death-defying and thrilling, and I cannot tell if this is from the episode where Albert wants to become a tightrope walker. You know, remember he's like doing all these death-defying stunts, and it's the same poster, it's the same artwork, but I can't, on top, the name should exist. So I'm going to watch for that right now. I don't think they're going to show it.
She's beautiful.
You prejudice.
No. Even if she wasn't ours, I'd say it.
She is beautiful.
The doctor said she's perfect. Just perfect.
I'd say the baby's about 6 weeks old. That's my new number. I wonder who this kid is. Somebody had to bring their kid to the set.
Or somebody brought twins to the set, because at that time, children couldn't have a whole lot of screen time. And it was even less for babies.
I would imagine that a baby, though, could get away with... I mean, this is literally 2 minutes of screen time. I don't know if they would need to have twins for that. If there's lines or if there's a recurring character, I think that SAG had rules for those type of things. But I have a feeling this is just somebody's baby. This is a one-off. That's my opinion.
That's a possibility. And especially since the baby maybe had 4 or 5 minutes of screen time total for the episode.
I think if that. I question, this whole scene alone is 2 minutes. You know, and it goes on too long. And you don't even see the baby the whole time, so you don't even really truly need. I mean, when you see the baby, they're all close-ups. These shots might not have anything to do with the actual shot.
I also think that the infant actor has to be a minimum of 6 weeks old.
Oh, really?
Yes, I think that's a California law concerning child performers.
What are you talking about now, though? I mean, you know, this is 40 years ago.
I'm talking about, yes, 40 years ago, yeah. And even past that. Up until the Coogan Law was passed, there were no real regulations for child actors.
Well, that's if this child doesn't get a credit. There's no credit for this child. So this is not even a paid role. It's kind of, you know, there's a number of, I don't think that the baby, for instance, that when Grace is born, there's no credit for that baby. And that baby was not, would not be the same baby that would come back, the twins. And it might have just been somebody's baby and said, yeah, just put them in.
I'm starting to think
without a credit,
I
don't know for sure.
I think that probably, I can imagine this. Victor French, who by the way, directed this episode, mm-hmm. probably asked the crew member, can we borrow your kid tomorrow?
Right. Give you a six pack. And lunch.
Yeah. A couple bottles of formula for the baby.
Yeah, there you go. And you get to have your baby in a movie. For instance, in The Godfather 2, I think it's 2. No, maybe it's Godfather 1. We have Sofia Coppola, who's a newborn in that. And there's no twin for Sofia. Mm-hmm. So, and she's in it. Actually, yes. She does have a credit, too.
She played...
she was the baby in the baptism.
Michael Corleone's eldest son.
Yeah.
I remember that baptism scene. I don't think anybody who's seen the film will ever forget it.
Yeah, yeah. It was a very tense moment. It's just, you know, there are ways of just doing it. You know, I don't think that, like, if it's a reoccurring role and there's actual hours being put in, sure, you need twins to go, you know, on and off, but... If it's just a baby, I'm going to just guess that you can just get away with just throw the kid in there. Maybe. Rolling. You know. Shoot it before the kid starts crying again. So, unfortunately, Lou's wife does pass away. They named the child Cynthia. Beautiful name.
Yes. And Alice, that's his wife's name, extracts... a promise from him. Mm-hmm. She wants him to leave the circus and raise their baby in one place.
Yeah.
Because moving around is not good for a girl, to quote her.
Yeah, and it's, I would probably have to say that she's probably right. That, you know, growing up in the circus is really, it sounds like a very tough life. So he promises, you know, he's just going to stay. He's going to do his best and he's going to find regular work. He's talking to John, who John's already really involved, you know, and he's at the gravesite and they're just talking about a little bit of real stuff that's happening.
That's right.
Kind of work you're going to be looking for.
I don't know.
Well, it might be something at my livery. It's hard work, but...
What kind of work, John? You must have something in mind.
Well, I could put you on a...
Come on, I need a ladder to get on that horse over there. I don't mind being little, but I'd like to do a job a little man can do.
I understand.
I'll go in town this afternoon and look for some work.
So where's the first place he goes to? Somebody should have warned this guy.
Oh, yes.
Whatever you do, don't go into the Olson's Mercantile. Just don't. Don't even shop there.
Mr. Olson isn't that bad. He's actually a stand-up kind of guy, but his wife...
Nell's, in my opinion... still let Harriet get away with murder here. His sister, of course, being Annabelle, is in a circus sideshow as the fat lady. And I don't know. I just feel as though this should have hit home a little bit harder and he should have put his foot down and just told her off at the very least. He does get mad. He gets uncomfortable and he's very upset. But he doesn't get mad. And I feel as though he just should have, personally.
I agree with you because he was just a kind man, a good man. He never had a problem with anybody. Quite frankly, I don't know how he married Harriet.
Harriet has her good qualities. It's just that her negative ones are so amplified at times.
Yeah. And not to get off the subject, but if you're hearing scratching on cardboard, that's Albert.
Oh, I don't, actually. I don't hear him. But that's okay.
He's right over here.
Oddly enough, I think there was an episode where it got cut where Albert Ingalls is clawing at the wall trying to get to the morphine. And it sounds, you know, maybe it's very similar.
I would agree, but I don't think there's any catnip in there for him to get off.
He doesn't know that, though. He thinks there is.
Yeah.
Check his shoes.
Yes, and by the way, Albert is not directly named after Albert Ingalls.
Well, today he is. I'm just kidding.
Well, yeah, just for today. My husband and I had named them after Queen Victoria and Prince Albert after quite a bit of debate over names.
Oh, very nice.
Yes, I had wanted to name them Albert and Laura.
Mm-hmm.
John is not a fan of Little House on the Prairie.
Yet. Yeah.
He wanted to name them after some facets of World of Warcraft. Azeroth and Sylvanas.
Yikes.
I told him there was no way that I was going to allow him to name the female kitten after a queen of the undead.
I wouldn't even name a fish that. It's not a good idea. It's just not.
So we went round and round a little bit, and he said, you know, I know you have your heart set on naming the boy kitten Albert. So how about we go with British royalty? Considering that he's British, I think that was a very novel idea.
There you go, twofer.
Yeah, of course, names being what they are, they never really stay what you originally named them, unless they do something really bad and then you resurrect the original name.
Albert?
Yes, there are times where I think my father and stepmother who live upstairs have heard me yell, Albert Henrik Arthur Quinn!
Oh my God.
Hey, they're royalty. They have to have royal names. And Vicky's is Victoria Floor Elizabeth Hope.
What? Well, it sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Fun name.
And they've finally grown into their names. Of course, not being quite 3 months old when they came to live with us, they were barely big enough for their first names.
Well, you have to post pictures of them one of these days on the forum. But so this next scene, though, is very cringy. So I find it difficult to get through it, but I'm going to do my best. So here we go.
Pardon me, ma'am.
Yes?
Down here. My name is Lou Bates, and I'm looking for a job.
He's looking through the gumball or jelly bean bowl, and his face is all distorted. It's bizarre.
What, land sakes! A midget!
Yikes!
It appears that way.
Well, I've never seen one before.
I'm just going to guess. I know nothing, if this is factual, that Catherine McGregor probably apologized and sat down with him ahead of time or just said, look, these are the lines. This is my job.
I have to say them. Yeah. I don't mean them, right. But I have to say them.
But I'm going to deliver them in a way where it might make you cry. That's basically it.
And Barty, being the consummate professional, probably said, it's all right. I can handle it.
I can totally see him saying, give me your worst, you know?
Well, it's a small world.
Oh, yes. It's... Oh, yes, I get it. That's very funny. It's a small world. Nils! Nils, yes, come quick. Yes, come look. Look, Nils. A midget. Isn't he cute?
There he is.
Oh, my God.
Oh, well, he is. And he's looking for a job. Oh. Isn't that cute?
Oh, my God. Isn't that cute?
It isn't meant to be cute, sir. I need a job, and I saw the sign outside. Help wanted.
So, yeah, she's just a giggling fool at this point. He asks, I don't want to call him Billy Barty, but asks Lou to do some ciphering. Does the math really well. Harriet realizes that Nels is taking it really seriously and is putting her foot down, saying there's no way we're hiring this little person.
Well, fine. I'll handle it.
And he's like, I'm not going to go out there and tell him that we can't hire him because, you know, he's little.
Harriet! Harriet!
Now then, Mr.
Bates. Lou Bates.
Yes, Mr. Gates. Would you hand me those peaches right up there on that shelf, please?
Also, is it Gates or Bates?
She did call him Mr. Gates.
I've heard Gates before, though. I could have sworn he said Gates before. But it's Bates, like Bates Motel, right?
It is Bates. I think that Harriet got his name wrong because she has so little regard for him as a human being that she doesn't even bother to get his name right.
Right. Like, yeah, whatever. So she's like, can you get me this can off of the top shelf?
Not without a ladder.
Well, we don't use ladders in this store. I'm sorry.
This is before, of course, discrimination laws and all of these other type of
I was about to say this was before the anti-discrimination laws and the Americans with Disabilities Act. Mm-hmm. But sadly, there is still a lot of discrimination against the disabled.
Yeah.
And I've seen it happen to John, my husband. John has a condition called hypopituitarism. Very briefly, his pituitary gland it's very small and it doesn't work very well. So there are hormones that he has to take either as oral replacements or periodic injections.
Wow.
He had to have growth hormone as a child, and he did wind up growing to be 5'11", but it's all limbs. And he also has some mobility issues. He's gone for a lot of interviews in the past when he was looking for work and had a very hard time finding work because a lot of people just didn't want to take the chance.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because people are always going to find loopholes, always going to find ways to not hire somebody because of these physical disabilities or ailments or color of their skin or a variety of reasons, you know, because the person just, they don't like the way the person looks. And it's a shame, but there are thankfully some changes in the law to protect these things from happening as often.
Yes.
And thankfully somebody like John Carter exists, and John Carter comes screaming along. I mean, the baby could be sleeping, by the way. Is anybody thinking about this? He comes screaming along.
Did you find a job today?
No. Shut up. The baby's sleeping. Jeez. Like, what is wrong with you?
Oh, good. Because I got you one, and a good one. I was talking to a friend of mine today, Mr. Anderson.
Now, wait a minute, John. I don't want you to get me a job just because you pressured a friend.
Will you just be quiet a minute? I didn't pressure him. He pressured me. And he needs somebody real bad.
We're getting these shots, too, from Billy Barty's point of view, where it's like the camera's being shot way up, like crazy angled up. And we've seen shots like this before, but this is extreme.
What kind of a job?
Bank teller.
A teller? A bank teller? Oh, that's perfect.
And it would be perfect. I think that somebody like Lou, who is personable, smart, and probably trustworthy. Well, I mean, I guess we don't know if he's totally trustworthy. And I guess he does kind of prove that he can be a little shady, you know. But at the same time, I think this would have been a perfect fit. And he goes on the interview. Now, a
couple of minor adjustments.
Yeah.
He certainly won't need a taller than average chair to sit behind the counter.
Well, they could set up something like that pretty easily. You know, if Charles Ingalls can fix a girl's limp, they can build a platform for him to sit on that nobody would see.
Exactly, and I'm sure that John Carter can do the same.
Yeah, he's not doing anything. Just sitting around enjoying our little house. And here's that scene where they've decorated this little house probably as well as it can be. They have light sconces. They have a china cabinet.
I will bet you they even patched up that hole in the plastic.
It's so funny. I don't know if you're, like, you're spying on me, but I have to know if they patched up Carrie's wall. I bet you they did. I guarantee you they did. And I'm going to probably start watching season 9 completely, just watching for ferns and looking for plaster repair. Yes. John's the type of guy who will do it. Cost a nickel in plaster to fix that.
It took a while to convince Lou I had nothing to do with it. He wouldn't take any job if he thought it was just the charity.
What did he say once you got him convinced?
Oh, he was so happy he couldn't say much of anything.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out who's more excited about the job, you or Mr. Bates.
It's just the good feeling.
Yeah, Dad, what do you love this guy? Jeez. Don't you have your own job to focus on today? Come on.
To see something good happen for a man like Lou.
You know, the last blacksmith was a rapist, right? Like, you have a lot to prove to these people that you're not a psychopath. Worry exactly. About your own position. Jeez. I'm just kidding, of course. Not about the rapist part, because that was horrifying. But yeah, he is the new blacksmith. Let's never forget that.
And thinking back to the Prairie Review, It took them how long that sign down?
I forget what season Kelly pulled out. But yeah, I mean, it was like well into like season 6 or 7 or something. I don't know what. It was far too long where they still had the old blacksmith sign up.
Yes. And how long would it have taken somebody to pull it down?
Oh, no, that would take too long.
And I'm still sure that Albert Ingalls would have gladly volunteered. He would have even burned it for them.
No, they probably. It was on private property. You can't touch it. Something like that. Something ridiculous. John walks Lou over to the bank. Lou's got his suit on. He's got his power suit on. He's ready to interview. So we're going to meet Mr. Anderson. I like Mr. Anderson a lot.
So do I.
In some ways, I like him more than I like Sprague. But I don't know why I like him more. I think maybe because people who are... They focus on Sprague too much. Forget about Sprague.
I think also that Anderson was willing to help people to set other people straight.
Yeah.
If you remember in Crossed Connections, he was more than happy to help Albert and Laura convince Harriet that there was a stock to be bought that would make a lot of money.
Yeah, he was ready to make a prank.
Oh, yes.
Now, one thing I do want to mention that, oddly enough, about Cross Connections is, if you recall, he had a telephone, right? That's how they did their prank. In this shot that I have where Lou is coming into interview, there's a phone on the wall, but it's in a different location. So he moved the phone, which I think is very strange.
Yes, and it would have taken a lot of doing to move that phone.
Maybe it's a second phone. Is that possible? Two phones? What is he, Rich? It's impossible.
He is the banker, after all.
He is the banker, yeah.
Oh, no, not at all, John. The sooner I get some help around here, the better I'm going to...
Bill Anderson, Lou Bates. Well, I'll leave you two to talk business.
So Anderson, at first, he's a little bit jarred. You know, he's a little bit like, what's this all about? But he starts talking to him and realizes that he's kind of a normal person.
Yeah, well, John tells me that you've never actually worked as a teller.
No, I haven't.
I'll be right with you, Mrs. Olson. What kind of work have you been doing?
Clowns, acrobats, I even kept books for the circus, too. Yeah, I'm very good at handling figures, especially large sums of money.
Well, let's see how good you are with figures.
So, clearly he has the experience, you know, keeping books. I mean, I would imagine that he would be a candidate for this job. And I would say that he would hire him, probably during this meeting, had Harriet not walked in and said, can I have a sidebar with you?
I think he's probably the best candidate to walk through those doors.
Yeah.
I don't imagine there'd be a lot of people in Walnut Grove who would be so qualified.
They may even be qualified, but they're farmers. You know, they have their own. It's not like John Carter can say, oh, I'll put in a couple hours at the bank. You know, it's like he has his own nonsense going on. Whatever, blacksmithing. Dink, dink. Trying to convince people he's not the same guy who worked here years ago.
And then having to shoe some ornery horses on top of that.
Yeah, you get kicked. But here, Harriet's going to chime in. Before, she referred to him as a midget. Of course, she's going to add to this.
Yes, Mrs. Olson?
Mr. Anderson, just what do you think you're doing?
What?
Certainly you're not considering hiring that dwarf in there, are you?
Why, yes, I was. I need a teller, and he...
Well, are you running a bank, or are you running a sideshow? I can't believe you'd hire someone like that.
Mrs. Olson, I do not judge someone by their size. I judge them by their ability.
Well, Mr. Anderson, perhaps there are a few other things that you should take into consideration.
So Harry basically is saying, you hire him, I'm taking away my business, which I don't believe for one second. I don't think that she can afford to close her account.
I don't think that she'd also want to make the trip into Sleepy Eye on a regular basis.
Right. I mean, I just don't see that happening. I also don't think that Nels would allow that to kind of happen. I know it's her business, but he does have some say. But Anderson, he also can't afford something. He cannot afford to lose the largest account that he holds. So
no.
He goes in there and he lets... poor Lou know exactly what's up.
To be honest, Mr. Bates, I really was looking for someone with more experience as a teller.
But you knew I didn't have that experience before I came for the interview.
I know. But I was anxious to get some help.
Well, if I don't know it, I can learn it very fast.
I'm sure you could. If I had time to teach you, but, well, you can see all the work I have here on my desk.
And, some people might not like the idea of having a freak in your bank.
Mr. Bates.
No. Call me Lou. Little Lou.
He gives him the finger and he walks out. No, it's sad.
It's just
he's hearing this his whole life. This is nothing new, unfortunately.
Well, Lou giving the finger, I think, was a deleted scene.
Yeah, that was on the cutting floor. But Laura's buying lunch. I don't know where she's getting all of her money. She's taking Carter's out. It's like, whatever you want. I have unlimited credit. Carter,
and I have no job.
Yeah, she's just doing her own thing, you know.
And I'm living with my husband and my daughter and my niece in this little tiny house. It's not even as big as the one I grew up in.
But not for long, because they do take over the big house. I forget what it's called. The big, big house.
Oh, I remember that. I remember when I was a little girl, I remember thinking, when I grow up, I want a house like that.
It's they end up, I forget how they acquired it, but in the very last episode, it's almost as though, actually Leah Mitchell and I just reviewed this episode the other, just a few days ago, the very last episode of Little House on the Prairie, which was kind of a launch pad for another series, where it was almost like, if you ever saw the TV show Newhart, it was almost like trying to be a bed and breakfast that Almanzo and Laura would have. Strange.
Yes, I I remember that, and it was going to focus more on Mr. Montague.
Ryan Montague and Edwards and all that good stuff.
Yes, and I think that Robert Casper and Victor French really had some good chemistry going. Because Mr. Edwards knew all of Mr. Montague's buttons and knew just when to push them.
Well, I don't know. I felt like it was just a very strange episode. I don't know when the last time you saw. It's actually Hello and Goodbye. It's a very strange episode. I mean, we bring back the wild boy briefly, who goes and, spoiler alert, his father shows up and takes him home. It's all very strange. Montague is a little too comedic for me for this show. And there's just something about his character that was not really resonating with me. But you'll hear that review. That's coming.
Yes. I think part of what was annoying about Montague, besides the fact that he was perfect,
he was pompous,
he was also, I think the British would say that he was very plummy.
Like plummy? Like a plum?
Just too posh and proper.
Hmm. Like hoity-toity.
Exactly.
Too much. Too much tea. But, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the character. But nonetheless, I'm saying John Carter runs into the banker, into Anderson. And I don't know. I think that Carter's just a little too involved here. Like, he gave him a chance. I don't know. It didn't work out.
John, it was Lou. Well, he left some time ago. Left?
Well, you didn't stop by and see me. I just assumed that...
I'm not going to beat around the bush, John. I can't hire him.
What do you mean you can't?
Mrs. Olson came by while I was talking to Mr. Bates, and, well, to make a long story short, she threatened to close out her account here if I hired him.
Why?
You know her as well as I do.
We all know her. We all know her very well.
Mm-hmm.
This is where John kind of pulls a paw a little bit. He goes right into the restaurant where he's supposed to have lunch. We see Hester Sue. Always nice to see Hester Sue.
Afternoon, John.
Hester Sue?
You'd better give me your order now. Mrs. Zoe's working the kitchen.
We won't be having lunch here today. I'll be right back.
John?
Yeah.
Laura's like, but I already ordered a bloomin' onion. Like, it's on its way. We can't send those back. But then Harriet's just tasting right out of the pot.
Ah, Hester Sue. Oh, it's too hot in here. I don't want to work here today. Oh, well, Mr. Carter.
What do you have against Lou Bates?
Lou Bates? I don't know what you mean.
Yes, you do. You told Bill Anderson you'd cancel your account if he hired him.
Oh, that Lou Bates.
Yes, that Lou Bates.
Well, for heaven's sake, what are you so upset about?
I'm upset because he's a fine man trying to earn a living, and you're stopping him. Why?
Well, because I don't want his kind here in Walnut Grove. You should thank me.
What is his kind?
Heavens, I shouldn't think I'd have to tell you that.
Well, you do.
Well, all right. I will.
He's deformed. He's not like us. He's a troll, that's what he is. For heaven's sakes, you have eyes, you can see. Why, he spent his entire life in a sideshow.
Because people like you made him. He has a family, and he has to earn a living somewhere.
Well, fine. Let him earn a living somewhere else. Why? Because he's not like us.
And this is like an ongoing trope with Little House on the Prairie, in a way. It's like to get people to say these things, and Harry being Harriet, you know? Poor Lewis is trying to earn a living, and it's true. He tells his mother that he got the job. She's like saying how proud she is, and it's clear he's very upset. So that's kind of a bummer. Like, that was like where I was like, oh man, I feel so bad for this guy.
I did like John Carter's comeback to Harriet, though.
With the
telling her that he was going to close his account at the store and would not be shopping there again.
I thought it was, I'll play it, but I think that it was silly, personally.
And the restaurant.
Yeah, I don't think he can afford to do that.
No.
Yeah. Well, trust him with the children. He's different.
Mrs. Olson, cancel my account at the store and the restaurant.
Well, why, for heaven's sake?
Because I can't trust you. Your eyes are too close together.
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice gesture, but he needs goods, you know? Like, where, I mean, what, is he going to go back and forth and buy them from a distance? I don't buy that.
It also reminds me of the verbal exchange between Jonathan Garvey, and Larrabee some seasons before in The Craftsman, when Garvey said, yes, I'm prejudiced too. Larrabee immediately brightened up and said, oh, really? Thinking he'd found a friend.
Right, right.
What are you prejudiced against? Short, redneck farmers.
Right. And, yeah, I mean, it's a similar line. I just don't... So what Jonathan said, of course, is, you know, his genuine feeling. But for him, for John to cancel the restaurant, that's one thing. You can cook at home. But where else are you going to go and buy lamp oil or sugar, coffee? Like, it just doesn't make... The guy drinks coffee constantly. He needs his fix.
I think he said it out of anger more than anything else.
Well, if somebody were to say something like that to me, I would expect them to follow through. You know? Like, the next time Harriet sees him, it's like, oh, I thought you closed the account. But, of course, the episode doesn't turn out that way anyway. It goes a different direction. We get this weird shot of a mob scene almost, surrounding a ladder, because there's been pretty much the first break-in in the history of Hero Township. Because do you recall there ever being another break-in? Ever?
No, I think the closest was in The Creeper of Walnut Grove, where somebody was going around stealing food, but he wasn't breaking in to get it.
Right, right. This was, yeah, exactly. But this time, totally different.
It is, it was a kid. Well, a grown-up couldn't get through there, that's for sure.
No.
Well, why on earth would a child want to come into a store and steal salami and bread when there's all that candy inside?
Well, you said there was a doll missing. That sounds like a child.
That's only one item. There's also eggs and milk and...
Harriet, you've already read that list to us 5 times. Now, whoever the child was, they wanted the food, that's for sure. Didn't even touch the money in the cash drawer.
Well, you keep saying he.
So we're concerned about his gender at this point, which is very important, right?
The child could have been a girl.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, I just know what I would say. I would say, okay, who cares if it's a boy or girl? How does that make a difference here? It's almost like, let's just give her a line, have her say anything. She's just standing there and she's the reason why we're all here in the first place. So Mrs. Bates, actually Harry gets the inkling that's like, it could be somebody the size of a child. Of course, thinking of, Lou, Mrs. Bates is cooking up some delicious salami and coffee, and, John's coming by with the Olsons.
John! Good morning.
Mrs. Bates, I don't believe you know Nels and Harriet Olson.
It's a pleasure. I've just been fixing lunch. Lou went shopping this morning.
Busted. Busted?
So there's plenty for everybody if you care to join us.
Lou around?
Yeah. He's in the wagon with Cynthia.
So he goes up to him and Harriet's like, you got to arrest him. This is not going to work out. John's like, I'll pay for it. He's like, nope, I want him arrested. But how do you feel about that? He breaks into your business. I mean, do you think he should be arrested?
I think that she should have considered why he did it.
Well, but as a business owner, right, doesn't she have the right to punish him for breaking into her and stealing from her?
It is a criminal act, yes. But I think the crime here goes both ways. Why did he break in and steal? Okay, the doll was a frivolous item. But why did he steal food? His mother and his daughter were going to go hungry if he didn't. And
but if everybody did that, of course, Harriet would go hungry. You know, it's just, I feel like, all right, you know, and he is asked the question, why didn't you just come to me? Why didn't you ask for help? And he said that he doesn't want to be considered a beggar. And I can fully understand that. I just think breaking the law and breaking into another person's property deserves punishment. That's, yeah. I mean, it's just my own personal, there's no ifs, ands, or buts for me. I just don't think that what he did was appropriate.
No, I'm coming from a background of having studied criminal justice, and watching this again, it reminded me of a class that I'd taken about women and crime, and how so many women are locked up because they had to turn to criminal activity to provide for their children.
Mm-hmm.
That's what came to mind. Yes, it's wrong, but they were faced with a really terrible choice.
Right, to break the law or don't break the law. And if you break any law, you have, in my opinion, you blow through the stop sign, you might get that ticket. Even if you're in a rush, even if it's an emergency.
If you blow through a stop sign, yes,
kill somebody, you know. I just feel as though, you know, this, I know that the sympathy is there for him, but he could have turned to John Carter and said, you know, can you help me? Because the way it also seems as though he's a bit of a, he's just passing through at this point. He's only been in town for, a few weeks.
He's also a prideful man.
I mean, but that doesn't excuse him from whether he can break the law or not.
No, but it explains why he didn't turn to John.
Yeah.
Not to make a pun here, but he was afraid that, I'm sure he was afraid that John would think less of him.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, there's people have pride. And but sometimes when you're talking about people starving to death, or going hungry and your baby needs food, that's where I personally feel as though pride needs to be put aside. You have to say, what's more important, their health or my pride? And sometimes I think that you have to just swallow your pride. It's just my own personal opinion.
I agree. And I've been put in that position a few times myself.
Right.
I can remember one time, this was a few months after I'd been through the whole thing with the hospital with diabetes. And I needed to get insulin. John wasn't working at the time. We had no money until I got paid again. And I had to swallow my pride and ask my father if I could borrow money for the insulin until I got paid.
Sure. I'm sure it was painful. Yeah.
Yeah. I knew that he wouldn't have a problem with it, but I was just so embarrassed. I was thinking to myself, you know, this man raised me to stand on my own two feet. I am begging him for money for necessary medication.
Right.
But not only did he say he would, he went to the pharmacy and picked it up.
Right. I mean, he did the right thing, of course.
Yes, and he went above and beyond.
And you thankfully had this person to turn to. But speaking from this, you know, this story is very different. And that's, he went in and stole a doll, you know. He went in and stole things that flat out weren't necessarily needed. And sure, the salami and bread, I don't believe that they were starving to death. I don't believe this character was. And I also don't believe that the relationship that he's already created with Carter is so strong that he would feel embarrassed. I just don't.
He also wanted to...
knows these people.
He also wanted to keep up the illusion for his mother that he had employment.
But that's, you know, then that's a whole different conversation. You know, that's really getting into other lies, you know, and I guess it's becoming this whole complicated thing. And I'm not saying he's a bad person for wanting to survive. What I'm saying is that he broke the law, and that's why he needs to pay the consequences. And I feel that way about anything. I'm just a very black and white person when it comes to that type of stuff. Now, one thing that I thought was a little bit questionable, a little strange, is that Miss Plum shows up and she's really friendly with Isaiah. I don't know if I've ever seen her speak to Isaiah.
You know? No, I don't think she's had much to do with him either.
But listen to this interaction.
Slow, sure. Not about.
Whoops, let me go back just a.
How's it coming?
Oh, slow, sure. Not about 30 feet more than I thought I'd have to go. Water table must be dropping. I'll hit her next day or two.
Well, I'm off for a long weekend. Yeah. No school tomorrow.
Yeah, no, circuit judge is holding court. Feel sorry for that little fella.
Yeah, we all do.
Then I'm heading on home for lunch. I'll drop you off.
Thanks.
Okay, let me cover up this hole. I'll be right with you.
Just weird. I don't know. I mean, granted, he's working for the school digging a new well, which is a big deal. I don't think that's a one-man job. Maybe it's a one-man for Isaiah job, maybe.
That's entirely possible. And while I could see them having a professional relationship because he's digging a well for the school, I don't see them being so friendly that he'll offer her a ride home and she'll accept it.
But there it is.
I mean, how well could they know each other?
Not well at all. I don't even know where she lives. I would think she would live where Miss Beetle used to live, which is right across the street, right?
Yeah. Now, Miss Beetle, I know that Isaiah Edwards and Eva Beetle were very close.
Mm-hmm. But that was a developed character, you know, that was a connection that they actually had.
That was actually a joke. I read Charlotte Stewart's book.
Oh. Let's see. So we have Lou in the ice house, which is where most criminals go to be stored. He asks, Nels comes and delivers him some food just to kind of eat. And he asks him to kind of hang out with him. You know, it's like, it's very lonely down here. Nels sits with him. We get another self-deprecating moment where Lou just basically refers to everything as it's a small world. I don't know. I don't like those kind of jokes, but they do seem to work in this context. We get a little moment where we have Nancy and Willie chasing each other, or rather Willie chasing Nancy because she stole a love letter. I wonder who Willie is writing a love letter to. It's kind of interesting.
Or who wrote to Willie.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Give it back. It's none of your business.
It is too.
Give it back.
A love letter.
You'll be sorry.
You will be sorry. Because you're about to become the second person to fall down a hole in town. Willie doesn't trip, but he kicks over a piece of wood that was covering the hole. Again, this is something that should have been covered up a little bit better. Maybe if Isaiah, you know, had one of those orange cones or something, kind of keep away from this.
Or manhole cover.
Yeah, manhole cover would be perfect. But Nancy falls right down the well, which is just crazy.
Yes.
It's a tiny well. I mean, it's a tiny hole. It's probably like 20 inches in diameter, maybe 18 inches in diameter. Lou and Nels are just kind of hanging out, having just the feast, practically.
Pa, it's Nancy. She fell in the well.
Oh, my God.
Lou's like, good. That's what you get.
I would think that Nels would be the one to say that.
No, I think they like her. I think that I've been working on this for a little while, that there's Nancy and there's Nelly. And I feel like Nancy, had the character continued, would have become just as sweet as sugar, just like Nelly, eventually. It would have just taken the right relationship.
That's possible. And thinking back to the moment where Nancy fell down the well.
Mm-hmm.
I remember watching that and thinking that it happened so fast, it almost seemed surreal.
She just falls straight down there. We don't really see her go down the hole.
No, we just see her drop.
Mm-hmm. She just kind of drops out of view, yeah.
Yeah, and first time watching that as an adult, I had to run it back a few seconds because part of my mind was saying, did that really just happen?
Yeah, she just does. She just vanishes. It's like, what? What happens is Harriet is hysterical, of course. They find that no one can reach her. Nobody can get down there. And they think, what about Lou? You know? So Lou is asked to help. He helps because Lou's the kind of guy who helps. They tie him down. They lower him. He gets way down there. I don't know how deep this well is, but I would imagine that 30 feet. I mean, it's very far. It has to be in order to reach the water table. Maybe not 30 feet, but it's a very deep hole. I kept thinking that Nancy was going to say something like terrible, like, oh, don't touch me, midget, or something terrible like that.
And as I say to people who say, ooh, you have to stick yourself so many times a day, I couldn't do that. I think that Nancy would agree with me if she heard me say, It's amazing what you will do when your life depends upon it.
When you have to do something, it totally changes the whole perspective of anything. There's no doubt about it. Lou saves the day. They bring him down. It's a very visual scene. But she comes up, and it's the first time I think we ever see Nancy so dirty. She still has the bow in her hair, though. I will say that. We get the sweeping music, and everybody's just all happy. Harriet's embracing her, and Lou walks over and wipes her face, and it's really just an unspoken type of thing. And in one of the weirder little things that Lou does is he returns himself to the ice house. He's like, and I respect this. It's kind of like he's ready to take his lumps. Like, look, I know this might not change anything, but I'm going to be back in the ice house. That's where I've been, and I'll wait. So Harriet says, she goes over there and she gives her discussion and her point of view of the way things happen.
You saved my little girl's life. I don't know how to thank you. I'm so sorry for what I did. If I hadn't interfered, none of this would have happened.
Now, that I don't know if that's necessarily true. I mean, Nancy still would probably have fallen down that hole. Right?
Of course.
There's nothing that she did that, the hole was being dug. The letter was being chased from, or she had the love letter and she fell down the hole. It has nothing to do with him. So I don't get it.
I think that he did it also because deep down he's a good, kind man.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, we love this character. And he made a mistake, and that's kind of where I was going with the whole he has to take his lumps. But it's, I guess all I'm basically saying is what she just said doesn't make any sense. Because it has nothing to do with what, she's basically saying none of this would have happened if I hadn't gotten involved. And maybe she's referring to him breaking into the mercantile. But I would imagine that the bigger story right now is the fact that her daughter was just fell down a well and was pulled out by this man. That's the bigger story, I think. But that's just me.
That's true.
Yeah.
I still think that Nancy would have done what she always does, and it's a good thing that he was there when she fell in the well.
So she goes on.
Oh, I wired the circuit court judge and told him that it was all a mistake. So you're free to go anytime you want.
He just sits there kind of looking at
him. Oh, and I spoke to Mr. Anderson over at the bank. And he wants you to start working for him tomorrow. Well, that's about it.
I think I know why he's still sitting there.
He's like, I thought he was going to say, like, he can't hear her or something like that. Like, something happened with his ears in the hole, or I don't know what I expected him to say.
I think he's just enjoying this.
But he's like expressionless. It's so like,
I don't expect you to accept my apology, but I want you to know that I'm truly sorry. I don't know why it is. I have such a
short temper.
What?
I have such a short temper.
If anyone has a short temper, it should be me.
Oh, yes.
I'm not a small man. I accept your apology.
Oh, thank you.
So, yeah, he shows that he's the bigger man, you know.
In a matter of speaking.
Yeah, metaphorically speaking. So we have a nice little voiceover from our favorite Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Lou Bates stayed on in Walnut Grove working for Mr. Anderson at the bank.
Even though we never see him again.
He was kind and hardworking, and we were all proud to have him as part of our community. Because regardless of his size, Lou Bates was a big person. A very big person.
And that's how we end. He's in his suit, and he looks good.
Yeah, I would have liked to see him a few more times before the show ended.
Well, Billy Barty being a star, you know, it was kind of like a Michael Landon thing probably to bring him in and put him to work. You know, that seems to be like a Michael Landon type of thing. I don't know. Do you think this character could have gone on to do much more with this, with Walnut Grove?
I could have seen him popping up here and there. I don't see him as being a series regular because you can only carry the little person thing so far.
Right. I mean, it becomes like kind of a comedic thing, it seems. And
yes.
Yeah, I mean, and personally, I said it a number of times already, and I really like the whole self-deprecation, like those kind of jokes, but you know, he seemed to really be fine with it, and maybe it was a part of his being. But nonetheless, I thought this was a really good episode, and I'm surprised we didn't get an episode of like this in the earlier seasons.
Yes, and I know that you're not a fan of the self-deprecating humor, but it seems that with quite a few short-statured people, they tend to make jokes about their height.
See, on the contrary, I know a few, and it's the complete opposite in my experience. Yes. They take it very seriously, and they get super offended.
I make fun of my height all the time because, to me, being short is funny. I would not make fun of another person for being short.
But you're not a little person. Big difference, you know?
No. As I said, I'm on the border of it. And there are a lot of times where I think being a few inches taller would be quite handy. Like when I have to get clothes out of the washing machine.
But this is, you know, it's just a big difference between saying a few inches taller and then like the health conditions of people who have dwarfism or who have a lot of issues. I mean, when you see Billy Barty walking, you know, you see he does have a number of physical ailments going on with his legs. And it's not just like that he's small. It's just that, you know, he's small and there's other issues. So
I
think it's unfair to for those jokes. That's all.
Yeah. I think that it was also taking a physical toll on him at that point. Because he was, as you mentioned, when that show came out, it was his 58th birthday.
Yeah.
And cartilage hair hypoplasia does do a number on the bones. So the fact that he was still walking and working was remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept working up until, I think, up until shortly before he passed away.
Yeah, in 2000. So I think that he had a very fruitful career. I really enjoyed seeing him in the Little House on the Prairie environment. And yeah, I although I wouldn't, you know, turn my nose up at him being in another episode, I think that it would just have to be there for a comedy moment. Or like another like Harriet, like, you know, being a butt of the joke. And I don't know if Little House is really kind of like that. And that's kind of the way I felt with Montague. Montague and like the way that he was with Edwards at the end of that episode, they were trying to have just a little too much comedy, comedic moments. And
it was
it didn't work for me.
It was forced.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, it's such a departure from the Little House pilot to Montague. It's just such a, like, it makes no sense. But, yeah, I mean, but at the same time, people have issues with season 9. These are some of the issues. And I enjoy it. I enjoy it. But I am going to start watching season 9 very soon so I could see if we can get a glimpse of that wall. Where Carrie used to sleep. We need to know. It's important.
I would like to know as well.
Yeah.
You know, I took a lot of notes about Billy Barty for the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Just to touch on a few of the interesting things. He was a Mormon.
Oh.
I don't know what religion he was raised in, but when he met the woman who was to become his wife, she made it very clear to him that she had been brought up in a Mormon family, and she wanted a Mormon husband and a Mormon household. And he was determined that he was going to convert her. She invited a couple of elders over to her parents' house so that he could meet with them. And he walked in there with his family's Bible, ready to argue with them. He lost.
Well, yeah, I mean, Mormonism is so close to other types of Christianity. It's, I mean, I don't know if you're Mormon or I don't know how much you know about Mormonism, but it's an interesting religion.
Yeah, I did quite a bit of reading on it because I told you that I spent several years in Northern California as a child, and my best friend through all those years was a Mormon. And her family were very devout. Her parents had been sealed in the temple. Very, very devout. She just passed away this past September.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. She had a lot of health issues, and she caught COVID, and her body just had nothing left to fight with. The Mormon.
Yeah, I mean, so did he become a Mormon? Like, he became a Mormon and died a Mormon?
He started practicing the Mormon faith, and he was baptized when his daughter, I think he and his daughter were baptized at the same time. Traditionally, children are baptized at the age of 8. For an adult, it can happen any time. But she started asking him questions that he really couldn't answer about why he wasn't baptized. And they were sealed in the temple in Los Angeles in 1982. He was sealed to his wife, and their children were sealed to them.
Well, as long as he was happy, I think that that's all that really matters, you know?
Exactly. And I really think that Mormons, for the most part, are wonderful people. They really are.
Well, I have no issue with people who are Latter-day Saints and all of this. But But yeah, it's another indication that Michael Landon worked with everyone. And everybody was on the set, you know, all different types of faiths, all different types of backgrounds. And it just didn't matter. If you were a good actor, that's exactly what they wanted.
Yeah.
But,
oh, and there was also something very funny that Barty had said regarding his family and who had what condition. And I'm just trying to find it here really quick. But somebody had asked him what types of dwarfism were in his family. And he said, as far as our physical descriptions go, Braden is averaged. I'm a cartilage hair syndrome. Shirley is a multiple epiphyseal dysplasia. Laurie is a Turner's syndrome. And our dog is a Maltese.
I would throw him right out of my house talking this way. If somebody gave me such a convoluted, long, you know what? It's also asking that kind of question to somebody is crazy to me.
Yeah, and I think he was probably annoyed that somebody asked him such a question that he decided to give that answer.
I'd throw them both out. I'd throw the guys doing it, and I'd throw Billy Barty's whole family out of my house. That's what I would do. Out.
What about the dog?
I have a Maltese, so the Maltese would stay. But Jeannie, I want to thank you so much for coming on here and talking all about this episode. It was a lot of fun. I'm so glad you came back onto the show. It's been far too long.
Well, thank you for having me. Yeah. I really had a great time with this. Ever since you asked me to do this, I couldn't stop talking about it at work. I think they were about ready to throw me out the front door.
Just shut up. No, it's
although my friend and coworker was very, very excited, and she told me, you've got to let me know when it comes out because the girls and I are going to listen.
What's her name?
Her name is Penny.
Hey, Penny.
And her two daughters are Eleni and Diane.
Eleni and Diane. Great name.
Yes.
So Penny, and Eleni, and Diane.
Yes, and I think she'd kill me if I didn't mention their cat, Smokey.
Smokey the cat.
Yeah, he's a Russian blue, and he is gorgeous.
Wonderful. But yeah, I'm glad if they're going to be listening. I hope you'll let Jeannie know she did great, as usual. And and again, thank you so much for coming on here, Jeannie. Just stay on the line.
Oh, okay. And before I forget, I also wanted to mention that I introduced one of my clients to Walnut Grove Cast.
Oh, excellent. Thank you. That's how we grow. Word of mouth.
She's been a bonnet head since she was a little girl.
Oh.
And I happened to mention the podcast, and she said, there's a podcast?
What's a podcast?
Oh, no, she knew about podcasts.
Please feel free to pass my email along to her if she wants to come onto Wagon Talks.
Well, certainly. The next time I speak with her, I'll let her know.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to come on and talk about their stuff, about their love of Little House, it's Mark, M-A-R-K, at walnutgrovecast.com. The door's wide open. And actually, I'm releasing a new Wagon Talks tomorrow. I'm behind with all of my stuff. But lately we're doing so many different things. There's so much on the pipeline to come, including more Highway to Heaven episodes that we're reviewing. There's so many other surprises, including book discussions and all types of good stuff. So stay tuned. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting Walnut Grovecast by heading over to patreon.com/walnutgrovecast.